getting into my seatbelt. Oh, they're singing your song here. This is Gerald T. Harp.
Goodbye. KO4LEO and 0TR. Just heading back from the recycling center.
I was trying to get that rear defroster thing on. Backup cameras, they don't figure in too good when it's raining. Well, I can see, though. Oh, the one on the truck. Let me turn this radio down. I just barely got in the car, and we're backing up from the daughters. We took her down some Petitza, which is a German nut roll that Bernice made. And, oh, we bought her some white grapes at Walmart down here on Pelham. Coming down here, I-85 was almost stopped in the southbound lane. Really, wow, how dumb can you be? I shouldn't have everyone out there. How's your day?
I had to run down to Shaw Air Force Base yesterday and get my ID card renewed. And it was good to be back on the base and go to the base exchange for a bit and see what's new.
Wanted to go over there. I see it's like you turn to the right on one of them roads down there into the VA at Columbia, which I haven't been down there quite a while. But I'd like to go there and see that. We come by Jacksonville one time, and on the way back from Florida, we'd been to Clearwater. I was stationed there for about 7 months and wanted to go over there, but I was tired, so we didn't. Go to the Navy Exchange and whatnot, you know. But that Air Force base sounds interesting. The last one I was on was McConnell in Wichita.
Well, you know, you could go, if you have a disability rating, you could go to shop in the, I think, the commissary and the BX, if I'm correct about that. But if you don't have a disability or rating and you're a veteran, you can still shop online at AFIS. There's a way to do that.
Yeah, it's fun. I like going to Fort Jackson once in a while. It's really enjoyable and crowded, though. Cheaper gasoline, one thing. But if I'm in there and we eat anything, I generally try to buy one or two of the guys something to eat. And it's just fun. Just don't know where to go to see the recruits working out. That's a big place.
That's, I think it seemed like we stayed in the barracks there or something, but that was a long time ago when I was a kid. But yeah, you're right, that is a big place.
And Gerald T.R., how big is Shaw, Jim? Was you stationed there at one time or another?
We're stationed there, but I had business there on in my last duty assignment, and then before that, I flew missions out of there. You know, if we were staging to drag fighters across the water, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess they would have to have a lot of refueling. I wonder how many times they have to refuel going across there.
Tug six F-16s across the water. From Shaw all the way to Germany, and gosh, seemed like we did three or four, maybe five refuelings going across.
I know, usually on a mission they never stay out about over 2 or 3 hours, it seemed like, but with auxiliary fuel tanks and that, and at altitude, I imagine they'd have a pretty good range. And they probably have to fly the Great Circle up there, though, wouldn't it?
Flew a Great Circle route, and but the weather's got to be good all the way across. And we the last time I did that, we had to wait on the weather because they had to have at least 400 foot ceiling and a mile visibility, and they could never, you know, if you couldn't refuel, you had to divert immediately to your alternate base. And there's a lot of things that could happen. The nozzle could be malfunctioning, or their tanks wouldn't feed, or something like that. But as soon as we knew that it wouldn't work, then they had to divert. And so they'd have to go in pairs, or we'd have to take them as a tanker.
But why they'd have to divert and do what?
Land, you know, because the F-16 is a single-engine jet, so you don't want them out there in the Atlantic Ocean. It's a pretty big place, and you don't want a single-seat fighter with a single engine out there by itself.
Wouldn't be too good, would it? I sat on the wing of an F-16 at McConnell one time. My nephew was, he's not now, he was a major in the Air Force and flew the C-130s, and we went out there. Remember those atomic bunkers that were all camouflaged along there and you couldn't stop?
What now? I didn't catch the word.
Well, they were underground bunkers there, and they all had grass growed over them, and there was two fences and radomes every few yards down through there, and two armored personnel vehicles sitting up there at the top of the hill. And it said no photographs and no stopping.
Remember what part of the base that was? You know, they had a guard side, and then they had the perimeter road. I used to come in from, what was it, Oliver Street there by the Boeing plant?
A teeny bit. What was it? It was Oliver Street by the Boeing plant.
Wichita, I had a wreck right there at the intersection of Oliver Street and where the Boeing plant traffic crosses. Right over there, a guy hit us as we went through the intersection.
A little bit of that, but I heard most of it, Jim. Yeah, I used to love to drive down by there and see all the tails of the B-52 sticking up. And they also had a radar test range out there.
It's a great plant. I was sad to hear or see the Boeing plant close.
My brother-in-law worked there as a security guard for 10 years. And he took me there, and I got to walk up to the fence right next to the two Air Force Ones when they were still painted in green, you know, the, they call it the undercoating that they... in fact, I've seen them flying around out there. They're still painted a pale green look before they put the paint on it.
Was there, I think, when they were working on those, but it was a neat place because not only did they do military stuff, they had occasionally they would have aircraft come in from all over the world, 747s and the like.
It was really a neat place. And then you had Cessna and you had Beechcraft. Everything was out there. But no, there was and I don't know if it's still there or not, there was an atomic storage depot there many, many, many years ago. And you wouldn't have noticed it from the air at all. And Steve drove me by it, and you did not stop in front of that fence. And then they had guard dogs, and then there was radomes in between the two fences ever so many hundred yards down there that obviously were talking to each other in case the perimeter was breached. And I suppose that's where they stored the nukes for the ICBMs all around Wichita.
No, I don't remember seeing all that. I think a lot of that may have gone away when they went, you know, they did away with the Titan missile because of the explosions they had, I think.
Any explosions. I remember one funny tale about some airman. He decided, like they did over, for example, in Iraq, you know, this one's for you, Saddam. And he wrote something with a magic marker on the side of one of those ICBMs. And they said that if they had launched that, it would have burned a hole in the side of it just where he wrote on it with a magic marker from the friction.
And that's not something you wanted to be doing. I wouldn't be surprised that kid didn't get Article 15.
Yeah, probably several of them, because it cost a lot of money to do the repairs, I remember. But, yeah, they they had F-16s there at the time, and they had the B-1 bombers on alert. And I know there was two of them on alert all the time. And I don't know if they had live nukes on them or not. I presume they did back in those days. That's been a long time ago, Jim. This is your old TR. We just crossed I-85 headed north down here on Highway 14.
Things that that I had not seen that they worked on after I left. I left in, gosh, 87, I think.
Oh, yeah. This would have probably been before that, but I don't know. Time frame, I can't remember when Steve took us out there. Well, he didn't take us, he took me. But I enjoyed it, and sitting on that F-16 was kind of cool. But I think those were Air National Guard planes, and that's what he was in, was Air National Guard. And I think he became the command pilot there at the last when he became a major. But he was in the first Iraq War over there. But Wichita was a nice town. I enjoy a lot of history there.
It really is. My wife worked for both Cessna and Beach. She was stationed at the Air Force there, and she got out, and then I was still there, so she went and found a job at Cessna, and then they got bought out by General Dynamics or something like that, and then she went to work for Beach.
Worked for Learjet there for a couple of months when I got out of high school and got laid off. They laid off 300 of us. got $1.70 an hour for bucking rivets on a Model 24 Lear. That's back when they first come out, and movie stars like Bob Cummins and different ones were buying the planes. And I remember one of them said, I don't know if it was the Shah of Iraq or Shah of Iran or something like that. It had little flags on top of them as they went down through the line there. Of whose plane they were, I guess so. When they brought them in to tour the place, they could see it. But that was kind of neat.
One of the bosses that I had before he went on to be a wing commander at another base, actually worked for the Shah, they were going to do a tanker program over there, but when everything fell, all that fell apart.
TR with Gil 4LAO. Yeah, I don't remember. I remember all the ordeal when he fell, but I just don't remember the specifics of it. But yeah, those were the popular jet back then. And Gates bought them out, I think. And it became Gates Learjet or something. But I was there when Lear owned it, and it was just a starting up company, basically, out there by the airport where it was.
Little airport north of town called Jabara Airport. Do you remember that?
The only little one I remember is that one about halfway back to between Augusta and Fredonia, I think, and it had a restaurant there, and the general aviation folks would go out there, and there was a restaurant there, and they'd fly in there out in the Flint Hills.
It'd be the cattle ranch guys where they would get together, and when you land in a grass field, and then you taxi off the grass field and down the road, and you taxi your airplane up to the restaurant.
That's it.
But that was a pretty neat place. I didn't eat there, but I heard it was pretty good steaks.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. Boy, I bet winds out there were something at times. The frontiersmen that settled that, you'd go by and see these old rock houses and stuff out there in the middle of the Flint Hills. That's kind of a beautiful place in its own way. It's different than just the flatlands. That highway was a killer. I think it was Highway 47. and I'd drive that on my motorcycle back and forth to Pittsburgh, 165 miles. But it really had a lot of history with it. And you'd see them rounding up cattle and stuff like that on horseback out there, even in the 60s. It was really kind of a beautiful place in a way. I was thinking near that place was a big water tower and where the railroad used to run through. Am I thinking wrong there?
I think that was the deal. It was a place the cattlemen would assemble to buy and sell, and it, wasn't it a wooden water tower?
It was. My golly, Jim, you made me feel good. I thought my memory was really getting bad here at 74. But, yeah, it was.
Yes, I remember it was a big water tower and a railroad, and then there was a big house there, and then the restaurant was right there at the house, if I remember correctly. Seemed like a big farmhouse.
Yeah, only really stopped up by that one time in the car. Then we stopped by the wind generator field out there, which I don't know if it was there in your time or not, but boy, those things are big. I think once we did, didn't we, Mom? What was it for? A ham convention or something, maybe? Oh, she said a music thing probably when I was playing in the orchestra.
Really big runway up there. That was used to be an old SAC base. That was an old B-47 base. But I flew T-37s up there. We'd go up there and stop and get fuel there.
Well, it's the T-37 is that's Air Force, so you have to revive my memory. Was that a recip?
A French-made Cessna product, twin-engine turbojet. It's really small, but they call it a 3,000-pound dog whistle because it had such a high pitch.
Yeah, being around the turboprops myself, you definitely had to have ear protection. I don't remember what the RPMs was of the props, but I think they stayed at a constant speed of about close to 1,100, I think, Jim, but I'm not sure on that anymore. But I think those props are about 13 feet high.
Well, the T-37 was a primary jet trainer for the Air Force for a long time. It was introduced in the early 60s, and gosh, when I went through in the 80s, they were still flying it. I don't think they got rid of it until they brought on the T-6 Texan. It was the one that they used to do all the spin training in. You know, it was a great airplane. It was an easy airplane but a hard airplane to fly well.
Pick me out. I've always thought that if you got into a spin, you were just kind of SOL, but I guess they teach you, if you got a powerful enough aircraft, I guess you can drive out of them.
It was more about being able to do the maneuver in the right sequence. And then they actually added a little, maybe an inch and a half to 2 inch wide edge around the nose of the airplane to help the airplane get down into the recovery area because, you know, a lot of fighter aircraft would get into a spin and it would be like a flat spin and they couldn't get out of it. So they either had to deploy a drag chute or they had to eject.
They're not something you want to get into if you don't know how to get out of it. I never experienced that. I know Steve said he flew the T-38s there in Texas and I think at Lackland or wherever they send the recruits. And he said one time the instructors let him do as many rolls as and see how many they could do in a row before, I guess you freaked out a little bit or something. And I think he said he did 6 or 7 of them in a row.
In the 38, because there was an asymmetric or a lateral G limit that you had to be careful of. So if you spinned, if you rolled actually too hard, you could get some asymmetric G's there, and you could damage the wings or hurt yourself as a pilot. I mean, that thing, that 38 was a pretty maneuverable airplane.
You actually let them break the sound barrier in at one time, Jim.
Yeah, every pilot who went through pilot training got to break the sound barrier. They considered that part of your training because they wanted you to see what the instruments did and how the airplane responded aerodynamically. Because if you look at a 38, it's kind of like a shaped like a Coke bottle, and it was done that way so it could fly supersonically. But you know, it took off bad and pretty lightweight and ran down the end of the runway, as keeping it low as low as you could, and then pull back on the stick about 12 degrees, plug it into afterburner, and climb to 40,000 feet. It was a pretty impressive thing.
Right. This is Enduro GR. I didn't know they had a burner on them, honestly. I think there were normally, I didn't know they went over 0.95 or something like that, but Steve said they broke the sound barrier, so he would know. I seen a thing on the wall there at his parents one time, and I think he was the top gun out of his class that year.
I mean, usually the guys who are the top gun of the stick, or the top stick in the class, got their choice of aircraft. That's kind of the way that worked. Unless they really needed fighter pilots, and the guy was far qualified, so that's fighter attack and reconnaissance. They don't do that system anymore now. I think after you do the T6, you go to, they divide you into the tanker transport track or the fighter bomber recce track. Only the guys going to the fighter side got to fly the T-38s after that.
Yeah, he did have his choice, and he wanted to be an airline pilot, so that's why he chose to go with the way, I guess, the C-130s. That's what he started out with, and he's done real well. He flies the 787 now, and haven't heard from him in a while. I'm going to have to rattle his cage.
I wasn't all that great in pilot training. There were a lot of guys a lot better than me, but I wound up in tankers, and it turned out that the base that I was going to got the first group of R models, and it couldn't have been a better assignment for me, really. It turned out to be a really good deal.
This is Gerald TR. Well, Jim, I just read there yesterday where they're going to re-engine the B-52s again with a better engine pod and a Rolls-Royce engines on them and extend them another 30 years.
What an airplane. Yeah, they were talking about putting the same engines on them that they had that they'd put on the tankers, the CFM56s, but they may have come up with something else now. But it was nothing like the old days when you went out. I actually flew on one with some guys in my office. They were bomber pilot guys, and we were tanker guys. So we did a swap where we flew with each other. It's pretty neat. You go out to the airplane, and you look at all these wrinkles in the side of the airplane. But when you get to altitude, those wings stretch out there, and there's no wrinkles in the side skin of the airplane. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Now, didn't they have some wheels out there on the end of the wings to keep them from dragging the ground when they landed?
Inner wheels or something like that, but you're exactly right. They had to have that because the wings would, you know, especially if they were heavy, they could drag the ground there. So they had to have those wheels down to keep the wing supported there on the very end of the wingtips.
Really make them good. I know you probably already are all glass cockpits instead of steam gauges, but the 52, I would have thought they'd have had to redo the skin and that due to the cycles on the pressurization and that, but surely not. But I know they're going to put new engine pods on them. They're designing them now, and they're doing it with CAD systems to do it. And the engine, they got to make everything, the infrastructure and everything, right to be adaptable to the 52s. But I read that on Yahoo News the other day.
So Yeah, it's just an amazing airplane. America, as a nation, has gotten great return on their investment for the initial purchase of the B-52. When Curtis LeVay bought all those back in the late 50s, early 60s, and they've redone that thing I don't know how many times, but just a great platform and a great aircraft. Hats off to Boeing's ingenuity there. They did a great job.
Him and his big cigar. he was a hardcore, about as hardcore as Admiral Rickover was with the submarine Navy. He had a reputation too, but it kept us safe. Thank God for that. Wichita amazes me when I watch these old Western shows. They had a dock for Brake, and my aunt and uncle lived at 1826 for Brake there on the east side of Wichita up by Harry Street. And I'd ride my bicycle all around out there, and there was always a B-47 or a B-52 in the air almost constantly. That would have been late 50s, early 60s.
And, missions with live weapons on board, it didn't take them too long to figure out that wasn't the greatest idea in the world. They needed to stop that.
Yeah, they dropped an atom bomb out here off of North Carolina or South Carolina. I don't know which one. And luckily it didn't go off, of course, but the safeties on them are pretty good from what I've gleaned over the years. But they've done that a few times around the world. But they were a sight to see. I guess, I assume when they were building them, I know the tails on them and certain portions of them had fluorescent orange on them, and I'm almost certain they wouldn't have taken them out to fight in that configuration, but I do have a picture of one someplace on a 126 camera I took off my bicycle. It was a slide back then. But, oh my, I never knew there were so many airplanes in the world as they had there in Wichita.
The purchase of the tanker fleet was 600 aircraft. And when I first got in the airplane, we had a tech coordinator. It had all the tail numbers listed in there. And it was an amazing purchase. Of course, back then you could get the airplanes pretty inexpensively compared to what you do today. But still, the entire tanker fleet was 600 aircraft, and I don't know how many of the bombers they were.
Amazing. Did you ever go down on... I took a friend of mine out. He needed to go see a doctor out there one time, and Bernice and I drove him out to Wichita. And I took Bob down, and we walked around down there on that bridge, down below the bridge on Douglas Street, right downtown. Oh, that made that beautiful anymore. You can walk all along the river down there, Jim.
The July celebrations on that bridge, if I remember correctly, and you and I have talked about this before, the Wichita Orchestra would go out there and do, it's the one with all the cannons and stuff in it, but the Army would bring their artillery out, put them on the bridge, and then they would, to the beat of the overture, they would fire off the cannons. It was quite the thing for the kids to see.
Yeah, that's great. Boy, the geese down there were just thousands of them, and they got to be riding the back pass and that a little slippery in there. They got to be a nuisance. And over in our area where I live in southeast Kansas, if you got a Canada goose, so that was a trophy, and you'd have it stuffed and put on the wall. But out there, they were just lousy. But, I see those old movies and on Channel 21.5, and they got Wyatt Earp out there and Doc Holliday and downtown there, and some of the streets there are still named after some of these characters. I always found it to be a pretty safe town, other than the Northeast. But friend that I taught how to play French horn in the seventh grade, and I was a senior at the time, he went on to go to Eastman School of Music and places, and he was the first chair horn player in the Wichita Symphony for about 20 or 30 years, and the professor there. So that was kind of neat. So I always loved visiting with him now and then whenever I'd go out there to a seminar. His name was Nicholas Smith, but he's retired now.
Keep up with friends and especially people that you played the music with. It's a great experience. Listen, Tom, I'm going to have to run. I'm going to say 73 to you. I'm at my destination, so hope you and Bernice have a good afternoon, and we'll talk at you again soon.
Well, you timed that right, Jim. We're right in front of the garage. Just got home. Great talking to you. 73 KO4 LAO and 0 TR's clear.
KO4 LAO clear.
This is Kilo Oscar, Oil Whiskey, Whiskey Head. Anybody out there? I got a number to talk.